She is one of the best teachers in the world and has the award to prove it. 2015 Global Teacher Prize winner Nancy Atwell will join us. Is teaching like guerrilla warfare? Our activist blogger of the week thinks so. Wait until you hear from Peter Green. We will also take a look at trending news, hear from Matt Damon's mom, and have a moment of zen. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Jed Hopkins. It's time to take a look at the top trending news stories in education. Number one.
Self-control, empathy, perseverance, and joy. The new top of the list things that we want kids to do in schools, Jed.
Joy, I like that.
Do you have something against joy?
No, I like joy.
You like perseverance?
The joy of cooking, the joy of gardening. There are a few other joy books out there as well.
Self-control?
Sure.
You don't practice it yourself, but you believe
Correct.
Others should.
Correct.
Okay. What about, though, if I said, Jed, we are going to start testing students for their ability to show us self-control, empathy, perseverance, and joy?
If it moves, you can test it.
Hey, according to the Department of Education, now schools are going to be required to make sure that they start assessing what are called, quote, non-academic measures such as joy, grit, perseverance.
I thought you'd get grit in there.
Yeah, throw grit in there. Grit, joy, perseverance, and for you, Jed, self-control, there's a test coming your way. So we are now testing for joy? Really? Can't we trust teachers to do proper, authentic assessments of their students? I wonder what Matt's mom would think about real alternative assessment.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
We have to step back for just a second and say, what is the purpose of assessment? Because since No Child Left Behind, we've gone down a very wrong road, and there's been a misunderstanding of what assessment really is and how it fits into education, because it's a piece of the continuous teaching and learning process, assessment. It's very valuable for a teacher to be able to assess where children are in their learning because it informs a teacher's practice. And it's kind of a continuous cycle, assessment informing curriculum and informing teaching practice. And also, I think students from a young age should have some role in their own assessment because we want kids to begin to be able to look at themselves as learners and see what they do well, what they're interested in, what they need to learn more about. Because in order to be a lifelong learner and even a successful learner in school, you've got to care about it. You've got to be invested in your own learning in order to actually be successful as a learner. So, you know, with the standardized tests that we've seen absurdities, such as teachers don't even see the scores or maybe they see them a year later. So it's the complete antithesis of what I'm just describing about what would be the value of an assessment to an educator. Because assessment has been used to measure and to punish and to close schools and to evaluate teachers, assessments have been used for accountability in the last 15 years. And not really as a vital part of the teaching learning process. There are lots of examples. There are wonderful examples of how, of many schools and programs that use portfolios and teacher observation and interviews and projects and examples of children's work and including children and students in the discussions with teachers about their own learning. The film Good Morning Mission Hill, which people can get online, has a good section on assessment and shows at that school, which is a public school that Deborah Meyer started in Boston, how portfolios and alternative assessment are used and only used. There's no standardized tests in that school. It's a fruitful, wonderful way to look at a whole child, a whole student, their process for learning, the ways they go about learning, and a complete, you know, opposite from just asking them to know specific answers to specific questions.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
Number two.
Increased academic achievement, ADHD, what do they have in common?
An inverse relationship.
According to a new study by Jeffrey Bosco, MD, PhD, in the journal JAMA Pediatrics, actually the reality of ADHD and this whole idea of increasing standards, increasing the expectations, increasing everything so that we have achievement, he looked at that movement since 1970 up until today and shows a direct correlation with the increase in the amount of diagnosed ADHD, with the increase in the expectations. expectations and the standards movement for teaching.
Wow, what a surprise.
So there it is, medical proof
yeah.
that we are harming students when we put them into the conditions sure. in which high standards, high stakes testing are all the things that matter.
This is Busted Pencils Radio. Fully leaded education talk.
She has been a teacher since 1973. She founded the nonprofit Center for Teaching and Learning. She is a huge advocate of the power of reading, has authored 9 books on teaching, and is the winner of the 2015 Global Teacher Prize. Nancy Atwell, welcome to Busted Pencils.
It's a pleasure to be here, Tim. It's great to hear your voice.
The Global Teacher, how did you feel when you got that call?
You know, I didn't get a call. The whole competition was so highly secretive that I didn't even know I was in the top 10 until about a week and a half before I had to go to Dubai with the other 9 teachers from around the world. Fantastic, heroic teachers doing, you know, passionate work. Nope, none of them famous for their test scores. They were, you know, just teachers who loved kids and had ambitions for them that just went so far beyond the kind of empty standards that we're dealing with right now in our country and other countries as well. In any event, I went there and met them, and I think only maybe 3 or 4 people in the hierarchy at the Varkey Foundation knew who the Global Prize teacher was. So they made us all write acceptance speeches. We all had to practice picking up this trophy, which is gorgeous, but it weighs almost 20 pounds, so that whoever received the award wouldn't be so shocked that he or she would drop it. And they mic'd us all. So, you know, whoever was the one was ready to, you know, spring into action and deliver this speech. For me, I really have no memory of the announcement. I was on a stage with the other great 9 teachers who've many of them become good friends around the globe since then. And when Sonny Varkey read my name, I thought it was an oral hallucination. It wasn't until I got a bear hug from the teacher from India who was seated next to me that I understood that I'd won it. So it was done both very secretively but also very publicly. And I'll tell you, one of the things I was thinking about before I got on the plane to go there was, what is my face going to be doing when they announce that it's not me? So it was a tremendous amount of pressure, but it made it very exciting, and I think it sort of raised the level of the attention that the winner got. And it was in this magnificent conference room, and of course, you know, Bill Clinton was there. It, you know, just this extraordinary cast of characters from, again, around the world. I watched the video from time to time because otherwise I can't recall a minute of it.
So it's been a year now. Have you had to do special things during the year? And what about your school in Maine that you're running? Have you been able to stay connected the way you want? Or you know, or has this really totally changed your life?
I haven't been able to stay connected the way I want. And I think it's, you know, it's perhaps the only drawback of the prize. I've had a lot of obligations on behalf of the prize and the foundation, but I've had numerous opportunities to talk about education, especially literacy education, especially the damage being done by the Common Core. And I've had lots of opportunities to talk about what kids really do need as writers and readers. So that's been thrilling. I was able to speak at the Clinton Global Initiative in conjunction with the UN in the fall, and to speak at the Big Solve Conference at MIT. So these are opportunities that I never would have had without the prize. And in London in November, when I was there to choose the next top 10, I was pretty much wall-to-wall on every version of BBC there was, giving interviews and talking about both the prize and also my work as a teacher of writing and reading. And in fact, they would have van drivers come and haul me to one BBC site and then another. There's lots of BBCs. By the end of the week, the particular van driver who came that day said, "Are you the Nancy Atwell?" I said, "You must just listen to the radio all day long in this van." And he said, "Yes, indeed, but I think you've been quite intelligent." So, yeah, there have been a lot of obligations, but they've been remarkable. I'll tell you the best one, Tim. In July, I was invited to be the Grand Marshal for the 4th of July parade in Bath, Maine. And it's a great small city, probably a mile-and-a-half parade route, and like 3,000 to 5,000 people as bystanders for this parade. So they gave me this classic, great, long, low, honking old convertible from the late 50s. And the Varkey Foundation had made all these signs that said, hashtag Teachers Matter, which is their motif. And those were plastered all over the van. And I was followed by a bunch of kids from my school, you know, the most raggle-taggle group you've ever seen. And as we drove through the streets of Bath, at every juncture, people were clapping and cheering and saying, yeah, teachers matter, absolutely, teachers matter. And it was the most moving thing that happened to me, you know, as part of this whole experience, because it was just so palpable how people do, in spite of all the PR, love teachers and appreciate them.
Well, that's
I cried like mad.
What happened last year, right after you won this award, was, you know, the statement that you made about the fact that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily encourage idealistic people to go into teaching at this moment in time because of the Common Core, because of the non-creativeness. It sounds like after a year, are you still holding to that, or are you rethinking, or are you wondering if the possibility exists for change?
I think I wish I'd been more thoughtful about how that answer was going to play. But I also know that the first people I thought about when the CNN host said, what would you say to young people who are considering a teaching career, my mind went to my own young people. I've been teaching a long time, so a lot of my former students have become teachers. And those who are working in public schools are so frustrated and discouraged right now because of the Common Core and the questionable methods and the really seriously poorly designed high-stakes tests. And so, you know, when I responded, I was thinking about my own creative young people and thinking, you know, go to an independent school and just wait, because the pendulum will swing back. So the blowback was immediate. But I also got so many the blowback mostly came from Gates-funded teacher groups, which was so interesting. But public school teachers were supportive, and they knew what I was talking about. I know there was a poll in Education Week shortly after where they asked teachers to respond if they had to do it all over again, would they go back into teaching given what the state of the profession right now? And a vast majority of them said no.
Mm-hmm.
I had to be careful to separate out that I wasn't dissing teachers, that I was dissing the political climate right now, and that all teaching situations aren't equal. And there are, I know, are public schools where teachers exercise autonomy. But, you know, I'm sorry Carol Burris isn't an administrator anymore, because I don't think there was anybody who was more supportive of good teaching than she was as a principal of a high school. But for the rest of the teachers, it's scary, again, how discouraged they are and how what they're being asked to do with children is not what they went into the profession to do.
You know, Nancy, I'm so excited and thrilled that you got this award, because I've always associated you with, I've always thought of you as a teacher connected to what it should mean to teach. And I'm wondering, has it ever been as bad as this? Because, you know, your work has inspired a lot of people, but not everybody knows of your work. Is this an especially bad time, or has it always been somewhat problematic in terms of being able to do what your work has said we should be doing?
I do think this is an especially bad time. Mm. I think that the Common Core standards are just a disaster. They're unrealistic. They're developmentally inappropriate. They sent these benchmarks for children without any evidence that they're either achievable or beneficial. And I think they represent a reckless intrusion into public schooling in this country, because the impetus behind them was private foundations and corporations. I mean, Tom Newkirk says they formed a kind of shadow government and bankrolled the development and propagation of the standards. And to some extent, I think U.S. education has been taken hostage by the Gates Foundation, by Hewlett Foundation, IBM, Exxon Mobil, the whole list.
Mm-hmm.
And those funders turned over the development of standards for American school children to two groups I had never heard of in a long scholarly professional career, Achieve and Student Achievement Partners. And these two groups essentially invented the Common Core state standards behind closed doors with, again, no research, no field testing, and foisted them on American school children and on their teachers.
When you made that comment about teaching, I actually applauded you too, because I didn't take it as a diss on teachers. I took it as exactly what I think you meant, which was to say to people the culture right now is not a great place to be. Now, given that, what would it take for Nancy Atwell to say to your best student in your school, I want you to teach?
I think there are going to have to be some political solutions, because these are problems that were created by politicians. And I think the first is to stop clinging to these failed reforms. It's time for policymakers to chart a different course, away from No Child Left Behind, away from the Common Core standards. You know, we know that on the most recent round of NAEP tests, which were supposed to show how beneficial Common Core was, that the reading scores, you know, either stagnated or they actually went down. You know, the kids are being damaged by this curriculum. I also think, and I do believe this is starting to happen, perhaps even with John E. King in the last couple of weeks, people need to stop the attacks on teachers and the scapegoating, the attacks on tenure and unions, because, again, where you had a rate of, what, 50% of teachers lasting 3 to 5 years, that's gone down to, like, 2 to 4 years now the Common Core regime. And I think, you know, we've got to stop for once and for all evaluation systems. Well, they're designed to fire teachers based on metrics that nobody understands.
Right.
And, you know, the obvious thing, the thing that nobody wants to talk about, the elephant in the room, is that we need to recognize that we've got two public school systems in this country. The one for the middle class, those kids are doing just fine. But it's the one for the poor, and it's the one for kids who are in segregated schools who are not doing well. And we need a coordinated strategy. I'm saying, yes, address school achievement and standards. I believe in standards. These are just so wrongheaded. Mm-hmm. But also address poverty and segregation and early childhood and prenatal concerns, so that the children get the sort of wraparound services right from the beginning that give them the background and the knowledge that a lot of middle-class kids have just naturally going into school. I do see some signs that over the last year, I'm sure because of my remarks on CNN, the pendulum is starting to shift a little bit more, you know, to the left, because the reforms aren't working, and people are seeing that. You know, people are opting out of the test. I think it's going to be, you know, more and more likely that an aspiring teacher can interview in school systems where he or she is going to have some autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
Not everywhere. And,
right.
And I certainly hear from the teachers who are completely handcuffed in terms of what they do when they close the door. I mean, they've become technicians. There's no reflective practitioning going on in those rooms at all. And those are the people who are leaving teaching. But there are public schools where people are more awake to other possibilities and understand that the Common Core standards have, you know, propagated the most bereft version in my field of literacy that I think there is. You know, mm-hmm. basically, its whole purpose seems to teach kids how to tolerate boredom and difficulty, and that's it.
Well, there it is, the teacher of the year of the world, who's about to hand over that reign to somebody else, Dr. Nancy Atwell. It was an honor to talk to you, and I'm really, you know, I'm getting gushy. Because I've waited for this, and it's been wonderful to talk to you. I wish we could continue talking, you know, and had a 3-hour talk show where we could just really lay these things out. But we really appreciate your time, your dedication.
And, you know, one of the highest accolades we can give on this show is to say, Nancy Atwell, keep busting those pencils.
Thank you, you guys.
Thank you.
This has been a lot of fun.
This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils.
He has been a teacher for over 35 years. He writes a blog that says is about blowing off steam and standing up for public education. Welcome to the show, activist and blogger of the week, Peter Green. So your blog, Curmudgeducation, helps you blow off steam. What has you so steamed?
You know, a couple of years ago, I started digging into what was going on, like a lot of people. The rise of Common Core got my attention, and the more I dug and the more I looked, the more I started to see what was was going on at that time behind the scenes, and the more astonished I was, and upset and frustrated, and I started blogging primarily as an outlet, a reaction to what I was seeing out there.
Frustration.
Yeah, it was really a venting activity for me. It did not occur to me that any large number of people would actually read what I wrote.
A large number of people do read what you write.
That is true. But I think I'm still writing for primarily the same reason. I see more and more, and now, of course, people send things to me to see, and I feel the need to write about what I feel about what's happening.
Yeah, I like what you say on your website. Teaching is a kind of guerrilla warfare, but every so often the war comes to us. So the war's come to us.
I think that's true.
Yeah. Well, what's the war?
In many ways, it's kind of complicated, but I think the bigger picture is that there's an assault on public education, both as a means to take the money out of it, to dismantle it and sell off the parts, and I think it's also part of a larger assault on democracy itself. Those two things have kind of put us under the gun in education.
We hear that, though, and a listener out there says, okay, the assault on democracy, the assault on the public good and stuff like that, you know, you guys are X-Files conspiracy theorists. I mean, move on.
Well, I think there are things that you can point to that are a little more obvious. I think now that the reformers have had their way in a lot of parts of the country, we can start to see how things really play out. You know, the way that in so many places, fixing the schools somehow has ended up meaning doing away with democratically elected school boards, turning public education into private schools that are publicly funded. You know, we can start to see the things that are happening out there, and take the focus from what's going on locally, you can start to see that there's a pattern, that the same sort of things are happening all across the country. And I don't necessarily think there's a huge conspiracy here. I think sometimes you get the appearance of conspiracy when just a lot of like-minded people kind of team up and start going after their same sets of goals.
It's not really a conspiracy, and there's evidence to point to it. And in one way, what you just said, you know, it doesn't even have to be this delusional evidence. It's, you know, right in front of us. The closing of public schools, inner city Chicago, and cranking them out and turning them into private charter schools that are funded by public money. That's right in front of you for everybody to see.
I think a lot of people have slowly been waking up. I know for a lot of people, the reaction for a long time was looking at things, for instance, in schools, a lot of teachers looking at things and going, well, it sure looks like they want us to fail, but surely that can't be what they mean to do.
Right.
And it's taken a while, but more and more people are concluding, no, it is what they mean to do.
Your website is not only incredibly informative, but it's humorous. The truth is bleak. And yet I love going to your website because it cheers me up, even though it's bleak. You know. But I mean, that's really important, right?
I think it's important not to treat a lot of what these people are doing and saying like it's really serious. It really is an emperor's new clothes kind of thing, that a lot of what's being said and a lot of what's being done really is absurd and really is kind of senseless and counterintuitive and just dumb, and I can't write about it without pointing that out.
Where did you come up with the commoeducation label?
I actually sat and thought about that for a little while. Yeah, the rule of doing business in the new age. If you're going to name something, Google first. And I decided really early on that I wanted to use a made word for whatever I was going to do, and curmudgeon and education seemed to be the two things I was shooting at.
Yeah.
I was a little inspired by Jennifer Berkshire's Edu Shyster,
yeah,
which is another great portmanteau blog title.
Peter, I want to say...
Keep
up the great work. Thank you. Writing for Curmudgeocation. And Jed, what do we say?
Keep busting those pencils, man.
Time now for our weekly salute to Howard Zinn with a moment of Zinn.
I am convinced that imprisonment is a way of pretending to solve the problem of crime.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Also, log on to BustedPencils.com to keep up with trending news, hear parts of the show, and nominate an activist of the week. For Jed Hopkins, I'm Tim Slecker, and thanks for Busting Pencils.